Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I'm Lori Wallach, and today we're very lucky to have Arthur Stamoulis with us for a conversation about the history of and the future of trade, justice, advocacy, and activism. Arthur is the executive director of the Citizens Trade Campaign and its sister organization, the Trade Justice Education Fund. Arthur is a longtime advocate and activist for trade justice. He started working in 2006 with the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, one of the state affiliates of the Citizens Trade Campaign, and has been in the middle of every major trade justice fight for the last 20 years. So let's start out with you just explaining, what is Citizens Trade Campaign, this thing that you direct?
Citizens Trade Campaign is the national coalition of labor, environmental, family, farm, faith, and consumer groups that's been working together on trade policy since the original NAFTA fight in the early 1990s. You know, our board of directors is made up of these national partner groups who'd get together and set strategy and policy decisions for the coalition. And then we also support state-based fair trade coalitions across the country.
I was there at the start of CTC. I sort of remember it in 1991 with labor lobbyist named Segundo Mercado Llorens from the United Food and Commercial Workers. He stood up and said, if we don't get together and trade, we're going to get sunk, and called together organizations to try and figure out what the hell was NAFTA? What's that thing called Fast Track? So Arthur is now the executive director of that proud coalition. How many people does it represent?
At least 12 million people altogether.
That's wonderful. So Arthur is in a position to really see the arc of this debate. Arthur, what right now is the most compelling and interesting aspect of where we are in this trade justice debate in the United States?
So when I started getting involved in trade work, coming right out of high school and college in the 1990s, right, this period where the Soviet Union had collapsed, the U.S. was the world's sole superpower, and the narrative was very much that corporate power in the form of free trade, privatization, deregulation, austerity, was the only way to organize the U.S. economy and the only way to organize the global economy. And one of the things that woke me up was participating in the battle in Seattle, the protests against the millennial round of WTO expansion, you know, in 1999, where you had all these different sectors coming together across borders to say no. That's not the only way to organize the global economy. And you had critiques of neoliberalism coming from the labor movement, the environmental movement, the family farm movement, the immigrant rights movement, so many other sectors, and people coming together really, in my experience, and one of the first times across sectors when I was still in high school. And so to see the power of cross-border, cross-sector movements to be able to go up against this march of corporate power that all the official sources were telling us was inevitable, it was just a revelation. And so ever since that time, corporate interests, those who push corporate interests, have been trying desperately to get back to that period where they set the rules for the global economy and that those rules would go unchallenged. So after the WTO expansion was stopped, when activists in the street really shut down the downtown area around the WTO, and that gave support and cover for countries in the global south inside the negotiations and say, no, we're not going to go along with this. Then the Bush administration tried to move forward with NAFTA expansion for the entire Western Hemisphere, except for Cuba, in the form of the free trade area of the Americas. And people again said no. And then they started moving to these much smaller regional and bilateral free trade agreements. And they had to claw tooth and nail to get even those passed. People continued to say no. And then, you know, their attempts to move back to larger sort of coalitions of the willing in the form of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And activists across the United States, across sectors, again, stood up and said no. The votes were never there to get that passed under the Obama administration, with Democrats in Congress standing up. And now we're at this period where people continue to say no. I mean, corporations aren't stopping. They're not ending their attempts to push forward their agenda. We see it most notably with big tech these days and these so-called digital trade deals, which we can talk more about. But we're at a point now where leaders of both political parties in the United States understand that they can't get these big, bad free trade agreements through Congress anymore, that the people have had enough, that they've seen the impact it has on jobs, on wages, on their quality of life, on the environment. And the question is, what's going to come next? That's the question we're wrestling with now.
Okay, I want to come back to that, but just give me a very sort of overview version of what was it about that old model that all those agreements had in common that had people so upset? What was it about that model? And who was behind it? Who liked it?
Well, I mean, the only people that liked it were big corporations. One of the things you saw was that it accelerated the global race to the bottom in wages and working conditions, where jobs would be shipped around the globe to whoever workers are the most exploited and environmental regulations are the weakest. I mean, literally millions of jobs under NAFTA and the WTO shipped from the United States, and that put a very real downward pressure on the wages and the benefits of the jobs that were left, and that rightly pissed off a lot of people. Then you saw corporations using these deals as a backdoor means to sneak all manner of deregulation and privatization and monopolies for drugs that had nothing to do with free trade, or the polar opposite of free trade, into these so-called trade agreements. That started to piss off a lot of different sectors as well. And so it helped organizations like CTC really build a lot of strength. The overreach of corporations through these deals was so extreme that we were able to get groups to put down whatever their differences were and work together to stop it, because they understood this needs to stop, whether you're coming at it from a labor perspective, an environmental perspective, a faith perspective, a food safety perspective. This is too much, and we need to work together to stop it.
I remember some of those first meetings of the Citizens Trade Campaign as this damage was happening. The U.S. government certified more than 1 million jobs lost to the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, just under one narrow government program. That's an undercount. NAFTA had rules in it that promoted offshoring of jobs. It made it cheaper and safer to take jobs that were union jobs paying a middle-class wage with benefits and ship them to Mexico, where people were getting paid $5 a day. And those jobs basically leaving also destroyed the tax bases of communities, hollowed out communities, led to the political polarization. A lot of research has shown several million more from the trade agreement that let China into the World Trade Organization. And then laws we used to love, the dolphin safe protections that banned tuna fish from coming into our country that killed Flipper, the food safety mandatory rules that told us where our meat came from, Environmental Clean Air Act rules that helped fight asthma. All of these very concrete things started to hit folks at home, but folks wouldn't have known about it, but for the kind of organizing and activism that Citizens Trade Campaign helped do. This was a truth squad that helped Americans tie the bad outcomes to the actual causes, which then jumps us to where you were going, Arthur, which is, you know, the moment we are now.
Yeah, we're at a point now where Biden administration, right out of the gate, said we're not doing free trade agreements any longer. We're not going to do trade agreements that have giveaways to big pharma in terms of monopoly protection extensions that jack up medicine prices. We're not going to have procurement restrictions that really limit Buy America, Buy Local, Buy Green government purchasing preferences. We're not going to have investor state dispute settlement, which I'm sure, Lori, your listeners know all about, ISDS, the system where corporations can circumvent countries' domestic judicial systems and attack environmental rules, all sorts of public safety, public interest regulations through these extrajudicial tribunals demand millions, in some instances, even billions of dollars compensation for following the law. And more recently said, no, we're going to reverse the Trump era giveaways to big tech that threaten consumer privacy, data security, AI accountability, anti-monopoly provisions. So we're seeing a lot of progress. And meanwhile, we're seeing more progress towards having enforceable standards on labor in particular, where there's a lot more work that needs to be done. But a corner has sort of been turned where at least the work now is starting to be done. And so it's a very exciting time where you have the legacy of this work for 25, almost 30 years now, getting us in a position where we're really good at defense and the opportunities for offense really being out there. And our coalition is looking at different ways to capitalize on that.
So I'm thinking about the situation right now where you have basically Trump promising again to do the things he promised he was going to do when he was president. I'm wondering how the member groups of the Citizens Trade Campaign see those promises versus what he actually did, and then compare that to what Biden has done. How does that all line up?
Yeah, so Donald Trump, to his credit, has talked a great game on trade. I mean, other than Bernie Sanders, you know, he's been out there letting working people know that he feels their pain on trade. I say that a little tongue in cheek, but he's really run on the issue. The problem is that the talk hasn't always aligned with the walk. So one of the classic examples of this would be his quote unquote phase one trade agreement with China, where there's no mention of labor rights abuses. There's obviously no mention of the environment. There's no human rights mention in the agreement at all. No standards that actually protect workers or human rights, but all sorts of protections for corporations that move work to China in terms of intellectual property and investor protections. And so that's part of what we saw under the Trump administration. He promised to get rid of NAFTA. What he did was renamed NAFTA, the US-Mexico-Canada agreement. There are some positive changes in there, but he came back with a deal that did not have the labor enforcement mechanisms that we needed, did have new giveaways to big tech and big pharma, and only by our coalition working together with labor and the environmental movement, others, were we able to remove the giveaways for big pharma, get some labor enforcement tools added. That's not something that the Trump administration just gave us. That's something that Democrats fought for and won in that process. You know, has done some smart things on tariffs, but that's basically what we got out of the Trump administration. A lot of good talk and not as much follow-up in terms of walking the walk. The Biden administration, I would say, is almost the reverse. They have said really good things about the need for worker-centered trade, but they haven't been as loud about it. I don't know if anyone could be as loud as Trump has, and so I don't think they've gotten as much credit with voters as Donald Trump did for attacking free trade agreements head-on. But in terms of the policy is stronger. It's not everything we need. There's a lot more that needs to be done. But the policy has been better in terms of worker rights enforcement, in terms of refusing large parts of the corporate agenda that's been pushed for decades, and in particular, reversing the Trump era giveaways to big tech.
So as you're thinking about the next phase of the trade justice work, what are the goals you're striving for? There's certainly been a thinking turnaround, and a broader swath of the public is realizing the old rules definitely didn't cut it, and Citizens Trade Campaign and its affiliates and partners definitely had a big role in that. So what is that truly better place to go, and how do we get there?
The two biggest pieces are, number one, continuing to make sure the door is shut on the old model, because our opponents are not giving up. They've made money hand over fist through this model. They continue to push it, while at the same time continuing to push for standards that put people and the planet front and center. That's largely worker rights standards, ensuring that people everywhere have the right to organize unions and demand better on-the-job safety, on-the-job treatment, better wages, as well as environmental standards, food safety standards, privacy standards, you name it. And so that's really where we are today. And it's going to be a continual fight, but it is a fight that I enjoy and that I think the grand arc of things, we are actually winning.
So when a lot of people hear the word trade, they think like, oh, that's not about me. But when you're describing and really what you're trying to do, it sounds much more like Alive. It doesn't have to do with what people think of as trade, but rather this particular set of policies got hijacked and it ended up becoming a way to basically undermine a lot of domestic policies that, as you put it, put people on planet first. So it sounds like if you want a livable planet, if you want safe, affordable food, if you want a decent wage and labor rights at your job, if you want to make sure we have products, next time there's a crisis, we can get the basic things we need to keep our families safe. If we want our national security. Now, wait a minute, I haven't said anything about trade yet. I've said about everything else people think about. It sounds like all of those things from what you're describing are somehow affected. And if we don't get these so-called trade policies right, all that other stuff that has nothing to do with trade is going to be really a bad situation that's going to affect all of our lives.
Trade agreements set rules for the global economy, right? These are international pacts that are setting rules in all the areas you just mentioned. And, you know, the main difference between trade agreements and other international pacts is that they have these built-in enforcement mechanisms that actually get countries to follow them more often than they do other international pacts like environmental treaties, human rights treaties that really have very little, if any, enforcement. And so it's important that we get these rules right for people's quality on the job, you know, their wages, for the health of the planet, whether we're going to address the climate crisis or continue to see it get worse and worse and worse every year. So many other areas in terms of the digital economy, in terms of food safety, in terms of medicine prices, you name it. That's what these trade agreements are about. They're not about just moving goods across borders, although that is a big piece of them. They're about the rules for the global economy and who gets to set those rules. Is it just going to be corporations or are people on the planet finally going to be put in the center?
So with that in mind, do you have one or two things that everyone can do right now to make a difference besides signing up for your alert?
Yeah, so if you're interested, you can obviously go to Citizens Trade Campaign's website or Trade Justice Education Fund's website, tradejusticeedfund.org. Trade Justice hosts a monthly power hour, a briefing for activists around the country to learn about the current issues in trade policy and how they can make a difference in their community. And the other thing I always encourage people to do, certainly on the CGC side, is talk to your members of Congress, your elected officials about this. A lot of them are hosting town halls regularly. They need to hear from you. When they're in DC, they're hearing from corporate lobbyists day in and day out. When they're back home in district, they need to be hearing from constituents about the issues that they care about.
Thank you very much, Arthur Stamoulis. Folks, I have said this before, but I want to just reiterate it. There is a good number to keep on your fridge on a yellow sticky. It's the switchboard of the U.S. Capitol. It's not just for trade, but definitely make calls on that. And of course, when we say trade, climate, food safety, jobs, labor rights, forced labor products, solar, you name it, it's trade related. And that phone number is 202-225-3121. So with that, thank you so much, Arthur Stamoulis, Executive Director of Citizens Trade Campaign and the Trade Justice Education Fund. Everybody, please take Arthur's words to heart. Get engaged. That's how we've gotten this far. Thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time, I'm Lori Wallach with Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach.